One and oh, it's a Wednesday, halfway through another week, whizzing by as they do when you get older. Yes, you know, I told you the joke about life is like a toilet roll. The older it gets, the quicker you get through it. And it is. The people will tell you that the days, the weeks, you lose track. It's just this. It's just a continuous thing. And it is, though. It's halfway through. It's not far worse, a third of the way through September, I guess. And I am here, and so is my guest. Now, my guest, she is a Master of Education, which has a degree in that, University of Toronto, which gives you a hint where she might be from. And lots of experience with social services and working with all sort of diverse populations there is, and contributes a lot in her storyline of her books. Now, how she came to start writing is something I understand, but we'll talk about that in a minute. She's actually from Toronto. I was talking to her before the show, saying I've been to Toronto a couple of times, four times I think it was. I went there to do a couple of days training, or give training there, and then a couple of times I've been there to sort out my passport and the green card and that, because it's the nearest British place I can get to, sort of thing. So just no problem, hop on one of those shuttle type planes with single row of seats and a outside toilet and prop engines and stuff like that, you know. It was interesting, but I got there and I had a great time. And I was just telling my guests beforehand, I thought I'd be able to get English food there. You know, like could be in Canada, you can get the sort of the things, the Marmite, the HP sauce, the sort of stuff like, you know, PG tips and all the sort of stuff there, being English shops there. But I couldn't find them. I walked around, I found a few restaurants and bars and stuff like that. Couldn't find the shops. I thought there must be some big shops in Toronto. And it was only on the second day where I went down into one of the underpasses to sort of cross the road that I found there's a whole rabbit warren under the streets of Toronto. All the shops are underground. Nobody tells me this, do they? Anyway, I was talking to my guest about this before, but I've been introduced her, because on the show today, I have the one and only Doralyn Moore. Hi, Doralyn. How you doing?
I am good, Barry. How are you? I loved your story about the underground stuff.
Well, it's true. I mean, it's like when I came to America, I mean, it seems stupid now, but nobody told me I had to go to this place to get a social security card. I thought it was all done within work. You know, and I'm sitting there and they're saying, well, have you got your social security number? And I'm saying, no. HR will sort it out at work and everything. Next thing, oh no, you have to make an appointment and go to, well, the nearest one's sort of like a little town that's two towns away, and Ansonia. And I went there and they said, oh no, you should get there as soon as you come here. Well, so how do I know if nobody tells you these things?
It's so true, isn't it?
I was really looking about you to start, and I started then. You know, your trip into becoming an author is via the fact that you read a lot, which a lot of people do, but it wasn't a case of you read a lot and then, you know, it developed into that. You suddenly thought, hey, I can do better than this. Why don't I try and write a book? Is that basically how it was?
That's exactly how it worked, Barry. Like you said, I love to read. In fact, I have been known to take a book to a Blue Jays game.
Oh, my goodness. Sacrilege.
And you wouldn't believe how angry my husband was with me. But anyway, I remember I read one book, and I thought, I can do better than this. But you know what, Barry? Looking back, it's not easy to write a book. I thought it would be easy, but it's not. It's not at all. It's very challenging, and I've found that out through trial and error.
Now, had you, like me, written sort of gone the poetry, the little songs, the short stories route before that, or did you just go straight into a book?
I went straight into a book.
Wow, that is something. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I did write a few short stories, but I don't get as much enjoyment out of short stories because they're short and you can't really follow the characters
as much as you'd
like to.
Right, because it's interesting, because actually it's another story about Toronto, funny enough. But I did, you know, when I was young, I did the poems, changed the poems, added a bit of music to them, became songs, because, I mean, songs are just poems to music, basically, and sort of went on from that. And then I started writing short romance stories, and I'm talking, you know, sort of 10-minute reads. And in fact, eventually I made a book up called The Bathroom Book of Romance, because it could be the bathroom's the only place you get 10 minutes peace and quiet to read the stories. But I used to publish these originally online, you know, every so often as I wrote them, the sort of thing, you know, perhaps once a month or something like that. And I ended up with quite a little following of people who I used to have to let know or send them copies of these stories and that. And one day I got an email back from a lady in Toronto who was one of the people who I sent these stories to. And she said, "Oh, I really like your new story," she said, "but you did it to me again." And I thought, what the heck is she talking about? And she said, "You know, I took it with me on the underground to get into, you know, into work. And I started reading it," she said. "I got into work," she said. "My makeup was run down my face. My eyes are all puffy and red." She said, "You've got to warn us when it's what we called a weepy. You know, it's got a sad ending or a twist. You know, it's a sad story." So I said, "Well, what I'll do, you know, perhaps I should give you a warning what happened." And what I did when I wrote my book of accumulation of them, next to the title of Weepies, I put a picture of a little box of Kleenex tissues.
that
people would know they were Weepies. So that's how I did it. And when I came to write my book, because what I did, I sort of said, you know, I read quite a bit like you and that. And I thought, whether I can do it or not, I don't know. But I said, I set myself a challenge each year, you know, like I'm going to run a London Marathon or I'm going to do this. And I said, right, I'm going to write a book this year. And what I did it like the short stories. It was in the days when you used to actually get an hour's lunch break, you know, not that you get that, yeah, but you're still working, you know. And through that lunch break, I, through the week, used to do a chapter for this book as a short story sort of thing, which has made the book almost like the old Saturday morning cinema serials. You know, you used to end the chapter with a bit of a cliffhanger, come back next week and find out what happened next, which in a way of writing, I found, and I, you know, I received from people who've read the book, it makes it much more of a page turner, because they want to get to the next chapter, they want to know what happened, you know, and this sort of thing. And that's how I came to write my book. But in your case, you just went, "I can do better than this," and you did it.
talk about being naive, eh?
You did it, though. You did it, and you self-published it, and that was your 70 times 7. Was that your first one?
The first book was 70 times 7. It was, I self-published it. And then I am just getting the third book of my three-book series is coming out in a few weeks. And they're published by Elk Lake Publishing in Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Okay. Now,
so they're...
Go ahead. Check, go ahead.
They're traditional publisher.
Right, because the first time, the 70 times 7, which has become very popular, romance book, Christian romance, as it says, doing that yourself and self-publishing, etc., that you must have learned a lot from that, because people don't realise, especially with the self-publishing, that just because you've got a book in your hand, that's when the work starts. That's not means it's over and done.
You are so right. You know what? I find the marketing of books is more challenging. It's easier to write the book,
yep,
than it is to market them.
Indeed. And people don't realize this. I've had people on the show, I've given up, this book's going to be brilliant, I've given up my job, and everybody says it's a brilliant book, and I'm just waiting for the money to roll in, sort of thing. And, well, who knows about it? What do you mean?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, Have you got people to do reviews? Have you sent copies to these? Have you been on a show like these and stuff like that? In fact, that's the whole reason, in a way, that I ended up doing the radio shows, because when my book came out, I went around a lot of these sort of shows and blogcasts and stuff like that. And to be quite honest, some of them, with the host, it was the equivalent of a radio version of watching paint dry. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I enjoy a good chat. I can do better than these people. And there was another lady in my writing group. She fancied having a go. So I was a guest on her show, and she was a guest on my show. And then it went to sort of from one show a week to two shows a week. And at one time, sort of like four or five shows a week. And here we are from 2008, still going, over 2,000 shows. And my actual writing is now just down to parodies, song parodies. Yes.
Wow. But you know what? You have done so well, because just think, you started with doing a radio show. Now you're, I checked up on you, and I found out that your show is very popular.
Yeah, it seems. I mean, people like this format. You know, it's people say, I'm not sure about coming on, stuff like that. You know, these questions you are. I keep saying it's not your sort of serious literary show. It's sitting down having a chat over a cup of tea, a few laughs. Depends on the subject, obviously. You know, sometimes you've got very serious subjects, but you know, as long as you anecdotes and laughs and stuff like that, and as long as we talk to the writer, and as long as we talk about the writer's books, you can sort of meander through all sorts of stuff.
Exactly. And it is challenging. It's exciting. Getting the ideas for a book and then getting them down on paper. But yeah, as they say, isn't it Stephen King who says, I forget what famous writer. No, it was, I'm not sure, but that writing is really rewriting.
Yeah.
And that's what you're constantly doing. You're constantly having to rewrite.
And it's not just that, and this is a big thing on the show since we started, the business of listening to your characters, because your characters, no matter how much you plot and plan your book, your characters will lead you. Your characters will take you down different paths. Your minor characters might end up with major worlds. We had a lady on the show whose anecdote, I tell this story. Well, you know, she'd like 22 books, quite a really well-known writer, historical romance writer and stuff like that. And we were talking about these characters and everything like that. And she said, you're right. She said, you know, I was writing this book and I tried to kill this character off 7 times. Character wouldn't die. The character wouldn't die. She had to replan the whole story to have this character not dying. Yeah? And it's like people say about writer's block. Writer's block is the fact you didn't listen to the characters the day before and they've got the hump and don't want to talk to you. That's what it is.
And you know what they do? I love it when they have a mind of... I don't think somebody who's not a writer doesn't really
understand. No, they don't.
They have a mind of their own.
Yeah.
And they just take you, and you know what, I agree with you, it's very important to follow where they go.
Right, yeah, oh yeah, you if they lead you, you've got to go. Just, you know, if they're telling you the story, they're not going to wait for you. You just got to sort of hang on to the coattails and try and get it as much as you can down and everything.
Exactly.
I know religion plays a very important part in your life. You're part-time preacher and various bits and pieces to do with your church and that. Do you manage to incorporate that into your stories?
Oh, I do, Barry. That's very important to me. That's really the main reason I write, is because my relationship with Jesus and knowing him as my Savior is just so important to me. And because it's important to me, I want other people to know about it. And so, naturally, my characters, I bring it in to the lives of my characters. So, for potential readers, they need to know that is a part of the books that I write.
We had one last week, a lady last week. She had a visitation. Normally Angel Michael. Michael comes to people and says, we want you to write a book, or you need to write this, you need to put about what happened in your family or in your life or in, you know, to your mother or what have you, you know, and you need to share that with people. You know, we've had sort of dreams and stuff like that, but this often happens, with authors that I've had on the show, that they have been told or been led to the fact that this is something you need to do, you need to share. When you came to the decision to write your book, did you get that feeling that you were not destined, but you were being requested to share this talent that you have that perhaps you hadn't sort of realized with other people?
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. My book, you mentioned it earlier, 70 times 7, is a book about forgiveness.
Ah, and right.
Yes, because in the Gospels, the Apostle Peter came to Jesus and said, "How many times should I forgive someone who offends me?"
Ah, yes, 70 times 7, yes, yeah.
And Peter said, you know, he thought he was being really generous. He said, "Should I forgive them 7 times? Mm-hmm. And Jesus said to him, "No, 70 times 7. In other words, we need to forgive lots. And forgiveness has been important in my life because my dad and I didn't have a good relationship. My dad was very dyslexic, mm-hmm. and I think that he had trouble communicating, and I think it was because I didn't understand his disability.
Right.
That
right.
I didn't. I thought that maybe he was upset with me or angry, and so it wasn't a smooth relationship. But I really felt compelled that it was important to forgive him, and the Lord did bring me to a place where I have forgiven him. And that was really important. That was what gave me the idea for writing 70 times 7.
That's so funny in a way, because I do a lot of these YouTube. I look at a lot of these YouTube reaction videos, you know, where you get like the kids of today looking at perhaps some of the comedy stuff I grew up with or music I grew up with and stuff like that. And this week I have been watching a lot of these sort of youngsters, you know, hip hop type people and stuff like that, listening to Mike and the Mechanics in the Living Years, which basically is about a person not realizing that growing up that him and the father, they just didn't just see eye to eye. They were brought up in different worlds and different lives and stuff like that. And it's only perhaps after they've gone, or you suddenly realize that you just didn't understand. You didn't take the time to try and understand. You didn't take the... It was like you were talking two different languages and not managing to talk. The words of it, I mean, it won quite a few awards back in the 80s, I believe. And I've been listening to the words of it, and they are... I mean, you get these young kids, young sort of, you know, 19, 20 or young 20-year-olds, you know, hip-hop people and stuff like that. And they are in tears by it. There was one last week I was looking at. I was talking to my wife earlier on about this. I was watching him last week, and he stopped his show halfway through the reaction, and he said, "I got to stop the show. I need to phone my father. I need to phone him now and to speak to him and to say, you know, I understand what he's saying. That, you know, it was like two different languages, and he was in his way, I was in mine, and I couldn't see what he had." And then it goes to the fact that when his father died, he was, you know, he realized suddenly, and he heard his father's voice in his baby's first tears, sort of thing, you know. It is a wonderful thing, and the words are so true. Doesn't matter that it's like 40-year-old song almost. It is still relevant today. And I've had it on a show a few times. You've had abuse and all sorts of stuff on the show. And Joni Mitchell, "You don't know what you've got till it's gone. You don't know you don't know what you're going to miss, you know, until suddenly the person's not there for you to speak to anymore. You haven't made the effort to speak to each other. You've, both of you have got different paths, different words, different languages, different thoughts, different reactions and stuff like that. And it's only perhaps after the person's gone that you suddenly see, you know, that's why they were like that. That's what's
that. That's right. That's right. And I think, too, that forgiveness is such a big thing. If we hold bitterness or toward and don't forgive those who hurt us, it's really not hurting them. It's really hurting us.
Indeed. And that's why I wanted to know about having it in your book, because, you know, I've seen a couple of reviews on the books and stuff like that. And as I say, 70 times 7. Lots of people really like that. And of course, as you said, your series, I think it's third book of the series, something like that, you recently did. It's the sort of stories that, not just feel-good stories, but understanding stories. And you seem to be able to add that into your stories to communicate that perhaps, you know, things people don't take any notice of, and they should.
That's true. And just in the first book of the series, it's called Hope Doesn't Disappoint. Mm-hmm. And it's about someone with an addiction to gambling. But the thing that started me getting interested in that, it was that I knew someone, someone who was close to me, who struggled with that addiction. And I watched how it really could overpower a person's life. Right. And so that gave me the idea for that book.
Because you've got, that was the first, then it was Abundance of Grace and Cause to Triumph. Is that the one this year?
Yes. Hope Doesn't Disappoint is the first book. And then the second book is Abundance of Grace. And then the third book that's coming out in a few weeks, like you said, is Cause to Triumph.
Okay. Now, obviously, 30 years social services field, meet people, so many diverse cultures and people, stuff like that. That I'm sure helps you with your characters.
Oh, it does. It definitely does. And I think it provides a richness because I've worked with so many different, I've worked with the disabled, I've worked with young, I've worked with families, I've worked with single moms, all sorts of different people. And it's been wonderful. I've really, really enjoyed those years of working with, as you say, diverse populations.
So with that amount of mixture, I guess your characters are like a bit of a melting pot of the people you've met, are they?
Exactly. They are. And it also has given me, you know, working with people who are struggling, who are having problems and trying to deal with them, trying to sort through things. It's given me insight. I mean, we all do. We all have struggles in that.
Yep.
But it's also given me insight as to that people want to work through their struggles.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's so hard. It's hard for you to comprehend something that doesn't affect you. You haven't been through that. You are getting that person what's going on secondhand. You're not there. You're not at the coal face at the front of it to take the brunt of this, to sort of wake up every day, you know, dreading in some cases what might happen that day. And for us to try and understand that when we haven't lived that is hard, you know, is very hard. I mean, for you who've been through, you know, obviously with the with your work-wise and stuff like that, you see it more, but we still don't know. We still don't know.
You're right. You're right. Like the saying goes, walk a mile in my shoes.
Yeah.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. You're right. We don't really know until we've been in that person's shoes.
Yeah. I mean, I try. I got my daughter's a single mother. You know, my ex-wife and my son, they live in a property that was mine that I still pay for to keep a roof over their head. And we have a tenant downstairs. You know, rent out the downstairs, which is meant to help pay the mortgage and give them a bit of money so they got some money, you know, as well. Because, you know, she's just got sort of a handicap, not handicap, but, you know, her government money sort of thing. And my son, though he is a fireman, he can't work. And this is the stupidness of this country. He can't work because he has to have these injections every 2 weeks that cost $2,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Each. So if he worked, his pay would go in his sick pay and everything. I'm paying for these injections. So he's better off not working, getting the equivalent of unemployment, getting the sort of the government pay the medical. Though, you know, as I say, he's a fireman. He held the record for the most calls last year and stuff like that. Because he doesn't work, he's able to go because he's all volunteer fireman here. And, you know, he'd love to work, but it means he's got no money coming in. So Gessel has to pay for his, you know, don't even get the petrol money to get to the fire station and stuff like that. Guess who has to pay for that? The same person who pays for the roof over their head. The same person
that
helps my daughter support her son, who is autistic as well. So got that on top of it. And, you know, my own household here. You know, people saying, oh, you know, you did a good job. And so, yeah, but I'm paying for four different households right now. You know,
that is a lot, Barry.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. Tell my bank manager about it.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, what's the latest? What's the latest you're writing?
Right now, I should tell you, it's a little bit sad and a little bit not sad. The sad part is that it's called A Widow's Journey is mm-hmm. what I'm working on. But the reason it's a little bit sad is that 2 years ago this month, my husband passed away.
Oh, dear. Sorry.
And, yeah, my husband of 51 years. Oh. So I decided that it's been an interesting journey being a widow. And so I thought that I had some ideas, and I started writing a novel about a widow. And I'm about three-quarters of the way through.
Okay. Time has gone too quick. I can't keep up with it. It's way ahead of us. What I'm going to do quickly, hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find you and your books. So over to you.
Okay, thank you. I have a website at www.doralyn, D-O-R-A-L-Y-N, Moore, M-O-O-R-E, .ca. And on my website, there's links to buy my books. I also have a blog, which I publish twice a month. And one part of it is about writing, and you can look that up. You can also get my books on Amazon and Kindle, and I would say those are the main places to get my books, Amazon, Kindle, and then through my website. Well, and you can find me on Facebook.
Doralyn, it has been absolutely wonderful chatting to you. If I could have gone on for ages, that's why I didn't realize the time was going so quick. But it's great.
I enjoyed it.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Good luck with the books. Good luck with the new book. In a way, I can understand it a little bit. But a lot of people don't, and a lot of people don't realise what it's like being, you know, put in that sort of situation. So I'm sure a lot of people will read that and learn from it, I hope. Once again, just thank you for being such a great guest.
You're welcome. Thank you, Barry.
Thank you. Well, there you go. That was my guest, Doralyn Moore, talking about her books, herself, and everything like that. Great stuff. Well, that's it for this week. I'm back on Sunday with my two musical shows. Those were the days, Music from the 20th Century, and the theme this week is Lords and Ladies. Think of the songs, think of the singers, lords and ladies. I think I've got enough for two weeks' shows on that. And of course, that's followed at between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern by the Swinging 60s, music from the 60s, from around the world, not just the British invasion. So good stuff. And then next Tuesday and Wednesday, of course, I'll be back with fresh guests. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget...